KPDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franz, and two major storms are delivering a 1-2 punch to the West Coast. 180,000 people in Washington state remain without power, and another storm system dumping torrential rain in California.
North of San Francisco and Santa Rosa, the city is now on track to break its all-time three-day rain record. That's 122 years of record-keeping. 17 inches of rain fell on Wednesday and Thursday, and the rain is still coming down. Near the Russian River, homes are flooded. This man's home is included.
I don't know. I'm trying to take it one step at a time and just keep praying. And then after that, I start to think of, what kind of damage are we looking at once this is all done?
ABC's Alex Stone. Travel could be impacted by weather heading into this Thanksgiving holiday period. The TSA expects a record number of passengers. After Matt Gaetz took himself out of the running for Attorney General, President-elect Trump has chosen former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi as his nominee. She's already getting praise from Capitol Hill. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
For 92.7 WMDX News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Well, our snow didn't stick around. That's kind of what we expected, though. If you were out driving around yesterday, especially while it was snowing, you could see people really trying to get their sea legs back and figure out that winter driving again. Our next chance for some snow, probably some rain too, is Monday. And the language is changing this year around winter weather. The National Weather Service is using some new terminology. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
The NWS took away the wind chill advisories, watches, and warnings, and are now switching over to cold weather alerts. For example, wind chill watches will now be called an extreme cold watch, while what was once known as wind chill warnings will now go by extreme cold warnings. Matt Friedline at the National Weather Service says,
because what would happen in the structure that we had been in was you could have the winds usher in the cold air in, say, January, and the wind chill headlines are out, but then the winds end, but then some of the coldest temperatures happen in the wake of that, and there'd be no headlines from us in the Weather Service. So even though it would still be dangerous out, cold is cold is the approach here and the simplification.
And this week is Winter Weather Awareness Week, which is a good time to know where all of your cold and snowy gear is. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
A Wisconsin resort has been named one of the best in the country for cross-country skiing. Every year, USA Today puts out the Reader's Choice Awards, naming the top 10 of all kinds of things. And in the cross-country skiing category, Minocqua Winter Park ranked number 4. It's got more than 50 miles of trails for people of all skill levels. Another local favorite took second place, although technically not in Wisconsin. Lots of our skiers here enjoy it. ABR Trails in Ironwood, Michigan is just barely over the border in the Upper Peninsula. You can find more on our website, WMDXradio.com. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. This is 92.7 WMDX News.
The Bucks host the Pacers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks take on the Pacers tonight at Fiserv Forum. After a horrible start, the Bucks have won 4 of their last 5, getting more points from Brook Lopez, head coach Doc Rivers.
It's funny, we're talking about Brook today, and I made the comment you just can't ever lose faith in him because you know he can shoot the ball, and you know eventually it's going to happen. I come into the facility yesterday evening. I'm the only one in there. Brook was the only other guy in there shooting. It was a really cool thing just watching him shoot over and over and over again.
College football, the Badgers are off to Nebraska to play the Cornhuskers tomorrow, game time at 2:30. Sunday, it's the Packers and the 49ers at Lambeau Field. Tucker Kraft on losing in the playoffs last season to San Francisco.
Yeah, last year was a tough game because we had them beaten so many categories, and then we lose the game. So coming out this week and just trying to maximize every opportunity, that's going to be the main game plan.
That's Packers tight end Tucker Kraft. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
A few more sun rays peeking through those mostly cloudy skies today, with temperatures hovering in the low 40s. We've still got breezy winds out of the northwest, which will calm tonight. With a few more sunspots expected throughout the day tomorrow, highs will return to the low 40s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, 44 degrees.
Blind Shot Social Club, a perfect blend of cool, casual dining, indoor golf with space for events, craft cocktails, and non-alcoholic drinks too. A hidden gem on Madison's East Side. Blind Shot Social Club, open to everyone. BlindShotSocialClub.com.
Lena Bloom for The Bail Project.
Imagine you're stuck in a jail cell and you can't afford bail and someone offers you a way out. Just plead guilty and you can go home and kiss your kids goodnight. What do you do? What thousands have. You plead guilty whether you are or not. Cash bail makes poverty a crime. That's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will recap all the weekend's news, and we'll be joined by Dr. Kristen Lierley in hour number two. We'll wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 11. This is Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
Hey, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's not here today. She's on vacation. She will be back on Monday. We're on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can join our conversation at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Matt Rothschild, I used to be the editor at the Progressive Magazine and was the executive director at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. And there I got to know Angela Lang a little bit, and she's my co-host again today. My favorite guest co-host. She's the founder and executive director of BLOC. That's Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Angela, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. Happy Friday.
Yeah. I hope you have a nice weekend. I hope everyone has a nice weekend. We need to relax and regroup. I just wanted to let you know, Angela, and let our listeners know that Luke Mathers here at Civic Media just posted my latest podcast, the Wisconsin Forward podcast. It's entitled How Racism Infects Wisconsin Politics. And you've got a couple cameos in there. And Earl Ingram does most of the heavy lifting. But I think it's a really interesting look at this problem that doesn't get enough attention in our state and in our politics. And it's a real deep dive. Earl gets real personal about his personal life and growing up in Wisconsin and what it means to be a man of his age, which is roughly my age, a little older, dealing with racism his whole life, and then seeing Trump elected again, and racism playing a role in that, and just what it means to him and how kind of devastating it is. And so it's a very interesting examination, also an examination of deindustrialization in Milwaukee and what happened in Milwaukee because of that, and how it really took out a lot of the middle class of the Black community, which had the strongest middle class of any city in the country, he told me at one point. Yep. And so it's really well worth a look. That you can all catch that at civicmedia.us. It's on the homepage there. The podcast is called Wisconsin Forward, and this one's called How Racism Infects Wisconsin Politics. I'm excited about our show today, Angela. We're trying to get Christine Newman Ortiz on. She's the executive director and founder of Voces de la Frontera, the great immigrant rights organization here in Wisconsin. And then at the half hour break, as soon as we come back, one of the leading left wing union activists and intellectuals, Bill Fletcher Jr., is going to come on. He's written about Trump and fascism recently, and I want to explore that because, you know, we could spend all day talking about this appointment, that appointment, you know, whichever charade is happening in the Trump clown car. But really, the ultimate task we have before us is how are we going to combat Trump, Trumpism, fascism? And so we're going to dive deeply into that. And then just to give you an idea of the political breadth of the show, after the 3 o'clock hour, we've got former Governor Scott McCallum, a Republican, an old friend of mine. I used to play basketball with Scott at noontime, nice. At the noontime game, which was a mixed political game for about 20 years, 25 years. And so I've remained friends with Scott, and I'm glad he's going to join the show, too. And then in the last half hour, you might have to take the lead because we're going to talk about deep canvassing. And I know you've done some deep canvassing. And Steve Bauer, who's one of the leaders of the Jefferson County Dems and has been doing it real steadily there in Jefferson County with a great group of local activists, they're trying to make a difference, actually are making a difference in outcomes in Jefferson County, which is a reddish county. And the thing about red counties, blue counties, you know, there's no such thing really, because in every county, right. Even the so-called reddest county in Wisconsin, there are a lot of great activists on the Democratic side. And similarly, in Dane County, you know, there are a lot of people who voted Republican, too. So, yeah. You know, this is it's a misnomer just to slap a label on a county as though everyone in that county is one color. And so we need to get beyond that. How is your week gone, Angela?
It was good. You know, Tuesday was my first day back in the office, and it was good to be back, just kind of feeling the energy of the team. I think we're all still moving a little more slowly than usual. But on Wednesday, for Wellness Wednesday, we usually take a bit of a moment to kind of check in with each other and bring in some food and kind of have a good time. And our deputy director, Keisha, she said she put everyone's name in a bowl and passed it around. And whoever's name you drew, you had to say something nice about them. So, you know, I think folks are slowly, I think, getting back in the swing of things. But we're excited for our toy drive. We actually just pushed out signups today. So our team has been texting and phone banking for, you know, folks in our community and our contacts that may need toys at the end of the year. So we're switching gears and we're excited to do some of that non-electoral stuff now.
And at the turn of the new year, are you guys going to jump back into this Wisconsin Supreme Court race, or what are you going to be doing?
Yeah, we have a state Supreme Court race again. We'll have another state Supreme Court race the year after that. And I think a couple years back to back, we're in spring Supreme Court races. So that should be, you know, it's important for us to make sure that the community knows what's at stake. I think now more than ever, people kind of feel the impacts of a Supreme Court, maybe more than they did before. And to do that education on doors is really important. And yeah, we also have the superintendent, Jill Underley, is running for reelection as well. So we'll be keeping an eye on both of those things. We'll make sure to get the word out, especially when there's, you know, some voter fatigue happening now. And, you know, spring elections tend to be lower turnout just more normally. So I think it'll be a little bit of an uphill battle to try and get folks to reengage around an election after what just happened a few weeks ago, honestly.
And you have to combat exhaustion, too, and depression. I mean, exhaustion, yep. Just because since 2010. It's been unrelenting, one campaign after another here in Wisconsin with really high stakes every time. Yeah. And so it's hard to recover and get the energy back to get back in the arena. But I'm sure we all will. I have a hunch about the spring election that there'll be so many Democrats and progressives wanting to express their disgust that Trump got back into the White House, that this will be their first public effort to display their disgust, and they'll flock to the polls and help get Susan Crawford onto the Wisconsin Supreme Court against the odious Brad Schimmel, who, you know, comes across as an arrogant jerk anyway. And Republicans keep putting up arrogant jerks. At some point, they're going to have to figure out that's not a winning strategy.
Wasn't it Brad Schimmel when he was AG, he had the coins? He, like, bought these coins for his office. That was him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that I think speaks to the arrogance. I think it also, especially from a more fiscal standpoint of a Republican Party, I don't feel like that's a good use of taxpayer dollars. So interesting that he got those coins for himself. But yeah, I think it'll be important to make sure that people still know what is what's happening, what's on the ballot. And I think it's very easy that an election like this could fly under the radar, unfortunately. So I think getting folks to start talking about it now and trying to re-engage, especially when people are kind of tapped out a little bit.
Yeah, so this is an election for the Wisconsin Supreme Court in April. And again, it will decide the balance, the ideological balance of that court.
Now, again.
We've had some really good rulings coming out of the Wisconsin Supreme Court finally over the last year. And, you know, that might change if Susan Crawford loses the election. So it is a really important kind of pivotal election. We saw really important cases coming down. The abortion case was one.
Yeah.
You know, Fair Maps was another. Megan Wolf. Just this week, Megan Wolf, the great administrator over the Wisconsin Elections Commission, who has been demonized something awful by the Republicans and taken all sorts of grief. And she's just a great public servant. And you know, they've been after her from day one, practically, since 2020 anyway, with no evidence whatsoever, just more propaganda about the so-called stolen election. And you know, we saw more of that nonsense coming out of Eric Hovde here. You know, the guy, again, you know, some of these Republicans, their worst spoiled sports you ever seen, keeps repeating propaganda about how votes come in. It's at the central count in Milwaukee, when we all know that happens. That's how it works. That's how it's supposed to work.
I mean, but also, one, how many days was it before he actually finally conceded? Way too many days. I don't even know how many, but it was like well over a week and he finally had conceded. But what's interesting is that this like whole central count narrative, oh, there's this midnight ballot dump in Milwaukee. And if you understand the sheer volume of ballots that need to be counted, you understand why they get counted very late. And so I think what's interesting is that Democrats have pushed forward a bill in the legislature, because the reason that is the case is that there is a state statute or state law that says that ballots can't be opened until election day. Now, Democrats try to push a bill to get that changed so ballots could actually be opened earlier. And so if you are opening ballots earlier, then you won't have those midnight dumps. But who is actually preventing it? Republicans. So it's just interesting that they're preventing the thing that they keep complaining about, because once you actually change that, then they no longer have this like narrative to lean on in terms of trying to undermine the integrity of the election.
Right, because the appearance is so useful to their little propaganda game. And, you know, other states have solved this problem. Other states now allow their clerks to start counting the absentee ballots the day before, a couple days before, I think, but not in Wisconsin. Maybe now with the new, less gerrymandered legislature, we can hope that a sensible bill like that, it did have some bipartisan support, but it got squashed.
It did, yeah. It's worth noting that there were some Republicans. I don't think there were many, but there was at least a couple that I know that had signed on, which I think is worth noting.
I mean, that's one of the things I'm hoping we'll be able to push through, or attempt to push through, at least get good hearings on. The problem with the gerrymandered legislature, we couldn't even get hearings on most of the good bills that Democrats were proposing. We're just not given any occasion to speak our mind on really important issues. So maybe we can get that. Maybe we can get medical marijuana. You know, we're late to the party there. I mean, we're surrounded by states that have legalized not just medical marijuana, but recreational use.
And the tax revenue, we're missing out on that.
It's just a joke that we're so backward.
Our schools have to go to referendum for funding, and then we have this opportunity, and we're not doing it.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can get more funding for schools, too. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild. She's Angela Lang. We're your co-hosts this afternoon. We'll be right back.
A voice for Madison, real news and great conversation. 92.7 WMDX.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going to get them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey Kay, a professor emeritus of democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I know you're the big FDR expert.
1934, he decided that the inequality and the wealth accumulated at the top was a threat not only to the American economy, but also to the American democratic spirit, American democratic life. The
way sounds like history's repeating itself.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us. It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
The crops are all in, and the peaches are rotten. The oranges are packed in, the creosote dump.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here, subbing in for Maggie on the Maggie Dawn Show. She'll be back on Monday right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And I'm delighted to have my usual guest host, Angela Lang, with me. Angela is the founder and executive director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. That was Johnny Cash singing the old Woody Guthrie song, Deportee. And we have Christine Newman Ortiz is joining us in a second. And Christine is the founder and executive director of Voces de la Frontera, the great immigrant rights advocacy group here in Wisconsin. Christine, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. I'm wondering how you're doing, Christine, because you know better than I do that Donald Trump ran a racist campaign with full-throated anti-immigrant bigotry and scapegoating, which must have felt like you and your members are right in the crosshairs. How are you doing?
Resolute, very disappointed in the blindness of people to really consider what, you know, what his administration will mean to themselves and to others, because he really, you know, he's a con man, and he's conned people into believing he's on the side of working people. He's scapegoated immigrants. You know, he's built an administration, past and now present, bigger than before, that is just for the billionaires, for the large corporations. He's going to continue to scapegoat immigrants, but everyone's going to feel, you know, the impact, the consequences of kind of these immoral efforts at mass deportation that are going to have an outpouring, and we're organizing for an outpouring of solidarity and resistance, but also, you know, when you a really big destabilizing impact, you know, people worried about the cost of their food. Well, you bet, when 80% of the workforce is undocumented and produces dairy, 1 in 10 jobs depend on it. You bet there's a consequence when, you know, with such low unemployment, immigrants have been holding up the economy. And unfortunately, and this is really something that, you know, was a problem with the Democratic Party as well, they didn't really challenge that frame on immigrants. And I think that just moved things farther and farther to the right. So I just think, you know, when you have the attacks on Social Security that are coming, the attacks on Medicare, the attacks on public schools, this kind of immoral separation of families and mass deportation efforts. You know, I think, you know, I basically feel like getting ready for a big storm, I'm getting ready for a big storm with others around me, and we've been here before. It is going to be a bigger storm because there's no one holding him back in these agencies that he's creating. And a lot is going to have to depend on what can be done at the local level, at the state level, and a lot of solidarity and resistance.
And what kind of solidarity and resistance are you planning or hoping for those of us who are supporters to engage in?
You know, one of the things that we're doing is setting up regional meetings. We've already had them, you know, Green Bay, Milwaukee, Sparta, Arcadia, where we've been, you know, building consensus around, and it's unanimous so far, like with a lot of our members, around standing up a lot of the organizational structures we had before under the Trump administration, because we do anticipate that in the first 100 days, he's going to pull away all of the executive orders, such as enforcement priorities, making everyone deportable, trying to put pressure on, you know, local governments or law enforcement to just be an arm of immigration, to profile, to a, you know, disregard everything and just kind of serve that purpose, and with threats of pulling funding. And so what we're asking is for folks to kind of find a home in these different organizational structures. So one of them is, for example, you know, helping to stand up what have become known as like sanctuary policies that basically affirm, you know, that we are a welcoming community, that, you know, we value the diversity of who we are. We value the contributions that immigrants make. We value their humanity, that we stand with each other, with families. And so, and then just having protocols around, you know, immigration, so that immigration doesn't, so like in schools, that was a very important work, where they were considered like, they can be named different things, safe zones, welcoming zones, but you had policies in place where, you know, there's standards around how, you know, immigration in and around the school, you know, like saying, well, we don't want immigration inside the school or around the school. If parents are dropping their kids off, you know, there has to be a protocol along when you go in, who you direct yourself. You know, do you have a judicial warrant for a person in particular? We're not going to just put a minor there to engage, you know, or be detained. So having those protocols in place and celebrating them publicly. So in different spaces, at city government, at in different, you know, hospitals could do them. Because I'm sure that, you know, all of these, like, sensitive locations where that had been won under Obama, kind of won back under Biden, will be stripped away again. And I think, you know, we're helping people... so there's ways in, like, you know, how can people at a citizen level, you know, help with that? Another thing is I think a very important protection is it's a kind of an uphill battle. But I think given the context, the reality that's going to happen, and that we have smaller margins to win at the state level, you know, in terms of differences between candidates, we have a state legislature that is now more accountable, that's going to feel that pressure more. And if you combine the movement power with, like, this legislative effort, we want to, you know, try to win, restore driver's licenses in Wisconsin. We had it for decades. Mm-hmm. It was taken away in 2007. And, you know, so that a social security number is not a barrier. That's very important. So for people to really weigh in and help build out this grassroots coalition for safe roads, lobbying, and, you know, even engaging Democrats, so that there's a lot of new people might not be as familiar with this issue. So the Coalition for Safe Roads is an important area. And, you know, donations for, like, different funds to help people.
Well, Christine, we're running out of time, unfortunately. I really want to thank you and all the work you're doing at Voces de la Frontera. We'll be right back on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thanks, Christine. Thank you.
Then wait back again. My father's own father, he waded that river. Others before him have done just the same. They died in the hills and they died in the valley. Some went to heaven without any name.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Did you know that more than 50% of the global population considers themselves lactose intolerant? Boy, that's a lot of potential dairy customers. I'm PM Yonke with a quick check-in on what's happening in food and farming news on a Friday. Now, a researcher at UW River Falls focused on trying to create ice cream that lactose intolerant customers can enjoy. Details next.
Farming is full of up and downs, but with the right tools, you can navigate any cycle. Join Compeer Financial's Grain Vantage webinar on December 4th from 9 to noon. Hear from ag industry pros like me, Rob Sharkey, during this free virtual event. Leave with real-world strategies to help you manage risk and explore opportunities in today's market. Visit compeer.com/grainvantage to sign up. The Grain Vantage webinar, helping you take control of your farm's financial future.
Dr. Grace Lewis is a researcher at UW River Falls focused on trying to create an ice cream that lactose intolerant consumers can enjoy.
Yeah, so this enzyme has to have some time to work to break down lactose, and it also, again, operates more favorably under certain conditions. So you add this enzyme in, you have to have a specific vat to store the ice cream mix as the lactose is being broken down. And when lactose is broken down, it's broken down into glucose and galactose, two sugars. And these things are sweeter than lactose is originally, as well as with two small molecules produced, it depresses the freezing point more. So the ice cream mix behaves a little bit differently. And again, it's an education point for me, where how can we teach processors about these differences and how to formulate to make the ice cream behave as normal.
Dr. Grace Lewis up at UW River Falls, a food scientist trying to create an ice cream that lactose intolerant consumers can enjoy. She says their formulations currently don't change the flavor of the ice cream. And in fact, they found out with the enzyme process, this ice cream melts slower than normal ice cream. They're not sure why, just a pleasant surprise.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
And 10 schools are picking up $500 grants from the Wisconsin Ag in the Classroom program to enhance their ag education materials. Those classrooms include Reidsville, Portage, Wisconsin Dells, Verona, Manawa, Glenwood City, Viroqua, Argyle, Clayton, and Athens. More at MidwestFarmReport.com. I'm PM Yonke.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
A few more sun rays peeking through those mostly cloudy skies today, with temperatures hovering in the low 40s. We've still got breezy winds out of the northwest, which will calm tonight. With a few more sunspots expected throughout the day tomorrow, highs will return to the low 40s. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, 44 degrees.
Oh no, my phone.
Hear that? It's the sound of a skater dropping her phone and smashing it on the ice. Yep, it's definitely broken. But at Verizon, we got you. Black Friday starts now. Trade in any phone, any condition from one of our top brands and get a new Samsung Galaxy S24 Plus on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch 7 and Tab S9 FE 5G. That's up to $1,900 in value. So you'll save big on three great gifts. Hurry into Verizon this Black Friday. Service plan required for Watch and Tablet. Up to $1,900 value based on phone, watch, and tablet. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Listen to the John and Gordy Show weekdays right here on WMDX, sponsored by Verlo Mattress. Sleep better, dream bigger on a handcrafted, locally made mattress. Find them on Madison's East and West Side or online at verlo.com.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome independent filmmaker Cole Sheldon. And it is a bar band Friday night, so that means our friend Terry Barr will drop by with new music and really fun chat. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you. Says I, but Joe, you.
Matt Rothschild here. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's off today. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network all across the great state of Wisconsin and around the world on the World Wide Web. I'm joined by my usual guest host, Angela Lang of Block, and excited to introduce to you one of the leading intellectuals on the left over the last many decades. His name is Bill Fletcher Jr. Bill is a talk show host, a writer, an activist, and a trade unionist. He's got a couple novels out. He's also the co-author of a book called Solitary Divided, and the author of They're Bankrupting Us, 20 Other Myths About Unions. Big union activist, and he's been writing recently after the election about the really important issue of Trump and fascism and how we overcome it. So why don't we just start, Bill, because I think this is the crucial question, but just for a little background, how do you explain the disaster that happened on November 5th?
So thanks, Matt, and thanks, Angela. Good to be on board with both of you. So my starting point, Matt, is very different from others, many others. I don't think that there was one explanation. I think that there were multiple things. I think it was a perfect storm. And so that's one of the reasons I was very angry with Bernie Sanders' response after the election, where he dumped the whole thing as about economics. And it's not. I mean, it's like there is certainly an economic component. Every incumbent administration that went through the COVID period has suffered losses, except in Mexico. The issue of inflation certainly was something that people were, it was very hard to run against. And no incumbent in the US history has ever successfully run for re-election when there was inflation. So we had those factors. But in addition to that, I think it's important to understand that a political current has been developing for years, which came together as what we know as MAGA. And so we have the revanchism, as they would say in Europe, the politics of revenge and resentment. We have the racism. We had misogyny dripping from the banners of the Republican Party. And all of these came together to speak to a lot of anger that's out there, a lot of what I'm calling the COVID PTSD, the whole experience of COVID and what that meant for many people, all of these things. And there were certainly mistakes on the part of the Harris campaign, both tactical and strategic. But the one thing that I would say that was missing from her argument was that the economic problem was not only about inflation. It was the result of 50 years of neoliberal globalization. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's sort of like if you imagine water saturated with salt. And then you add a little bit more salt and you really stir it up. You super saturate it. And it still looks like it's clear. And then you drop one grain of salt into the water and all of it falls to the bottom. That one grain of salt was inflation and COVID. That one grain of salt fell into the water and everything dropped. And people started feeling the results of 50 years of neoliberal globalization. That is what Harris should have been talking about.
And Vance played on that too by saying, look, at the Democrats brought you these free trade deals and people got screwed by them. And so it was kind of a flip.
But it was disingenuous. See, that's the thing that really, really gets to me, right? And which is why it doesn't make any sense for anybody to leave the Democratic Party and go to the Republican Party looking for any kind of economic justice. Neoliberalism was fully introduced into the United States by the Reagan administration. Last time I checked my history books, he was a Republican. His entire administration was advancing neoliberal globalization. The Democratic Party was late in showing up, but it was led by Bill Clinton in moving in that direction. So at a certain point, both parties fully embraced neoliberal globalization, and that's true. But it was the Republicans that really shattered the wall on this. And so when you have someone like Vance, I mean, it's completely disingenuous, you know, making those cries. It was the Republicans who were constantly advancing that, who were constantly advancing takeaways, and who are now once again debating reducing Medicaid, threatening Medicare, and other things. They're back to the same old gimmicks.
Now, you've been writing about Trump and the fascist movement. It's not just Trump, and it's not just Vance, and it's not just, right, you know, a handful of people. Fascism is a mass movement, and that's Trump right. has a mass base. I'm wondering, what percentage of Trump voters do you think are in that fascist movement?
I would put it like this. When I look at U.S. history, there seems to be among the electorate somewhere between 25% and 30% that consistently are reactionary.
Ooh, that's high.
Yeah, it is. But the positive side is it means 75% of us are sane, even if we don't necessarily agree. And I think that's what we have to deal with. I think that one of the mistakes, Matt, that has happened on the left, and we saw it with the Occupy movement, was the notion of the 1% against the 99%. It led many of us to believe incorrectly that there really was no social base to the oligarchs, and that it was really us against the oligarchs, as opposed to understanding that the oligarchs have a very significant social base. And that social base is complicated, because that social base is not an instrument of the oligarchs. It's a social base that sometimes unites with the oligarchs and sometimes is angry with the oligarchs.
So who is Vance, in that social base?
Well, let me just say something about Vance, because it helps us understand this. So Vance gives this whole anti-elite thing. But if you listen to Vance, this is what he's saying. He's saying, I'm angry. I'm angry as hell. Why? Because you all wouldn't let me in. He's not saying that the elite is itself a problem. He's saying, I'm angry because you would not let me in. And that is what that then translates down to the base, where you have masses of people, mainly in the middle strata of the economy, who are feeling crushed by the rich and fearful of the poor. And they feel like they're losing out on the American dream, and they want to do something, and they are inspired by right-wing populism and by fascism. That's what I think we're up against. It's not mainly, and this is interesting, because you have all of this stuff in the mainstream media about white workers this, white workers that. The MAGA movement, just like the Tea Party movement, its fundamental social base wasn't among workers. It was among middle strata. It was more skilled trades. It was more small business people, as well as the wealthy. And so this is something that gets misled, because in the media they say, well, a definition of class is whether you've graduated from college, which is BS. You've got all these small business people who graduated from high school, particularly white folks. And so it's not, that doesn't describe what we're up against.
So we're up against this fascist movement with a fascist leader in the White House. How do we respond? That's the crucial issue. And then, Angela, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay, so quickly, how do we respond? The first thing that we have to do is get away from mourning and despair. That there's been, that yes, we got our asses kicked on November 5th. Okay, fine. Now, get over it, right? The next thing is that we need to begin thinking about how to move forward. And central to moving forward, Matt and Angela, is the idea of united fronts, that we need to unite the various forces that have no interest in a MAGA future. And we need to be prepared for a variety of defensive battles, as well as some offensive battles. So by defensive battles, I mean, among other things, protecting migrants, both documented and undocumented, who are subject to being rounded up. The MAGA forces have increasingly, over the fall, talked about not going after just undocumented, but they've used this term remigration. You may have heard it. That was a term that these European fascists have invented for ethnic cleansing. We have to be prepared to protect migrants. We have to be prepared to provide legal assistance as well as mobilizing, much like the unemployed councils did in the 30s when people were being evicted. We're going to have to show up in force and to block them. So that's one of the things that's going to be important that we undertake. Another thing that's going to be happening is it's going to be an attack on a federal workforce. And federal unions, like the American Federation of Government Employees and others, need to have a mobilizing counter strategy. Now, that is antithetical to the way most of these unions in the federal sector have operated. But they're going to need to mobilize, and they're going to need to talk with the larger public about what the Project 2025, now Trump agenda, is going to be in terms of possibly eliminating 30% of the federal workforce and replacing them with appointees, right? So that's a second defensive battle. There's plenty of others, but let me say something about the offensive. I would argue that the Achilles heel of the far right is the environment. They don't have a response on the environment outside of genocide. And it's really important that the environmental movement move outside of Washington, D.C., and really start talking to people about responding to the environmental challenges. And I don't mean just simply recycling material. I mean, for example, these superstorms that have hit us, the superstorms are indicative of what we're going to be seeing in the coming years. But the other part of it is that the hollowing out of our social systems and our social net has meant that people have to survive on their own, whether it was a result of COVID or whether it's a result of superstorms. The right has no response to that. The environmental movement does in part and should have more. And so we need to be plowing ahead around issues of the environment, around environmental devastation, around what that means in terms of rebuilding healthcare, rebuilding social care, et cetera. That's where I think we can win right now. That to me is comparable to Doolittle's raid on Tokyo in 1942. We've got to shake up the other side and show people they are not invincible, and we can actually kick them in their rear.
We need certainly to do something to get our spirits back up and to show that we're just not taking it lying down. That's right. You know, people are so devastated after November 5th. So I think that's really good advice. Angela, I'm going to throw it over to you as soon as we come back from this break, because I want you to engage with Bill Fletcher here and tease him out a little more on how we defeat fascism. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in for Maggie Dawn today. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. And we're going to be back here in just a little bit to pick up this conversation with Bill Fletcher Jr. Bill Fletcher Jr. Is one of the leading left-wing activists and intellectuals in the country over the last several decades. And he's got a lot of important things to say on how we need to move forward and counter this reactionary phase. We'll be right back. They shot you, Joseph's arm. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe. I didn't die, says Joe. I didn't die. And standing there as big as smiling with his eyes, says Joe.
This is Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going.
IZERVAY is proven to slow GA progression.
IZERVAY gets GA going slower.
IZERVAY or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. IZERVAY can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. IZERVAY may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about IZERVAY today.
IZERVAY gets GA going slower.
Visit IZERVAY.com. That's IZERVAY.com.
It's the sound of a soda, considered one of the coolest things made in Wisconsin. Jolly Good has been around since the 1960s. Cryer Foods makes it in Random Lake, which is in Sheboygan County. But Cryer started as a canning company in 1913. What was being canned there? Sauerkraut? Peas? Beets? The answer coming up.
At Jolly Good, we believe in quality.
Soda turned into an important revenue stream when production at the canning company slowed in the colder months. So what was being canned there? Sauerkraut, peas, beets? All three, plus juice, soups, and more. By the 1960s, Cryer quit canning and went all in on Jolly Good soda.
For flavor and value, Jolly Good's got it.
The latest resurgence of Jolly Good makes it a slice of Wisconsin for yesterday and today. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
A voice for Madison, real news and great conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
All from the Indians, welcome to pilgrims, and to the buffaloes. Once rule a plane, like the vultures circling beneath the dark clouds, looking for the rain.
Hey, Matt Rothschild with you. That's a little Gil Scott Heron for you. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Our guest this afternoon for the next little bit is Bill Fletcher Jr., a leading trade union activist and intellectual on the left. My guest host, as usual, is Angela Lang of Block. And I'm going to turn it over to you, Angela, to engage in conversation with Bill right now.
Yeah, first of all, thanks, Bill, for being here. I think there's so much to learn. I was very excited to get to pick your brain a little bit. One thing, full disclosure, is my first job out of college was for SEIU, the Service Employees International Union. And that was roughly a little over 10 years ago. So I saw the right to work fight when I was there. And it was a little bit after Scott Walker's election and Act 10. And understanding, I think, in Wisconsin, being so polarized, we knew there was one side or another. There was a very clear villain. There was a very clear enemy to workers in Wisconsin. And so I'm thinking about, since that time, since Scott Walker was elected, how the Dems haven't been able to land an economic message, knowing that they are the party of unions, pro-worker, raising the minimum wage, paid sick days, things like that. That's what they're known for. And Republicans are very much not known for those policies. Why is it that the Democrats can't seem to connect what they stand for with the working class?
I think that there's a few different responses to that, Angela. So let me start with something about the Harris campaign and then work backwards. What's interesting is the allegations around that some people made about Harris, claiming that she wasn't talking about the economy, ignored her proposals. Like there was this article by this guy, Michael Barube, in New Lines magazine that identified her discussions about child tax credits, earned income tax credits, subsidies for first-time home buyers, incentives for building affordable housing, all of the things that you and I would talk about that would be directly aimed at the working class. I think that part of what happened was, at least in the Harris campaign, there was a mistake of expecting that there would be enough of a splintering of the Republican Party to result in a victory. And I think that was a mistake, a big mistake. I think that the second thing is that the Democratic Party, although it has been the party which unions and workers have generally rallied to, has always been a capitalist party. It is not an anti-capitalist party. And it is actually not a political party. It's really an alliance. And that's what many people miss, that there's in some ways five or six parties within the Democratic Party. And the pro-worker element, the element that I would identify with people like AOC, is a segment, it's a minority, and that the dominant force is a force that is pro-capitalist and has a very ambivalent relationship with the wealthy. And they also do not want to, they only want to upset the apple cart, but so much, which means that it's people like us that have to be pushing in order to bring about the kind of change that we need to have happen. When we don't, which was a big mistake under Obama, when we thought, oh, we got the brother in, he's going to do the right thing, that was a fundamental mistake. Yeah. And so I think that's part of what it is, Angela, the sort of gravitating back towards hoping that they can find some sort of normality. And it's wrong strategically. We need a different kind of approach.
I agree. I think there's a lot of times, you know, we talk about on the left building a multiracial working class movement. But how do we do that, understanding that there are folks that are a part of a union that still voted for Trump at the end of the day? That's what right. does that look like? So, yeah, thank you for that. And I think there's just more to digest and to chew on. But thank you.
Oh, I'd love to get into that question. I mean, if we had time, I mean, that's what I obsess on.
Yeah.
And I used to work for SEIU as well.
So, Bill, we're going to have to get you back here on Civic Media Radio Network, and I'll try to do that because we should dig into that issue a little more. Bill Fletcher is a writer, activist, trade unionist, a really leading intellectual on the left. Really appreciate you spending this half hour with us, Bill.
It's absolutely my pleasure. You take care and stay safe.
Yeah,
thank you. Be well.
You as well. Have a nice weekend. Okay, you're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild. She's Angela Lang. We'll be back in just a little bit with a different guest from a different party, actually. Yes. Former Governor Scott McCallum, Republican, will be joining us right after the break. So I hope you will tune in and you can join the conversation. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. And we'll be right back. Thanks for listening to us this afternoon, this gray Wisconsin afternoon.
And now it's a winter. Winter in America. Yes, and all of the hillers have been killed or sent away. The people know it's winter. Winter in America.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us on Monday. We'll take a look back at what made news over the weekend and get you ready for Thanksgiving week. Tourist travel tips. Join us then.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays noon till 2. Max Inc. Radio.
This is Paige Kleber. The 11-year-old will be live in studio playing songs from her new album. I'm Terry Barr.
Saturday and Sunday night starting at 6.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.